Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Something horrible happens, and we all look at law enforcement and say, what are you going to do about this? How did you miss this? I mean, it's a really terrible situation to put the FBI and police officers in. Luke Hunt is a former FBI special agent, now an associate professor at Radford University. And Luke, I really appreciate you coming on, because I do think we may have an unreasonable expectation that law enforcement alone can go through and identify real red flags. I mean, I know people who are, I think, basically decent people who get angry and post things on Facebook that are deleted the next morning. And I don't really want the FBI kicking in their door and dragging them out in the middle of the night.
Yeah. I think you make a good point. And I think that raises sort of two issues about the difficulty that law enforcement has here, specifically the FBI. So one, I mean, sometimes there's just little evidence to go on the front end. So this guy posted his screed or manifesto 20 minutes before he began the shooting. So that's one thing. I don't know that there's a lot to go on before that the FBI could have arrested him. The second thing is, I guess, the more pressing, deeper issue that you raised. The FBI doesn't investigate, as a general matter, unless we get into IT or international terrorism, ideology. If you go online to social media and say a bunch of, you know, hateful rhetoric, that's your business, and the reason it's your business is because it's protected by the First Amendment. So we have to balance that line between ideology and when that crosses the line to some sort of overt act toward a criminal act.
That is the distinction, though. You can say, I mean, I try to draw the distinction that Donald Trump's talking about enforcing the law regarding illegal immigrants, and everybody tries to lump that. The Trump haters try to lump it together with legal immigrants. So, but you could actually say, you know what, I hate illegal immigrants. You could say that, but you just can't say, let's go out and kill people or damage people, hit them in the head, you know, burn down their house. If you're advocating a criminal act, that's where the line is crossed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you on the one hand, we have, of course, everyone appreciates and respects this right to say those things and to view those ideas and to post them out there. When it crosses a line is when we get into the realm of what you might describe as domestic terrorism, which that's a big debate that we're having today after these shootings. And when you're trying to do something to advocate political change based on violence, and there's evidence that this sort of shooting would fall into that kind of category. So I think the question we have moving forward is, do we want to treat these kinds of things as an act of domestic terrorism and then bring more tools to bear to combat that, you know, change the law so we can give law enforcement more access to measures to sort of stop this before it happens?
Do you think that mass shootings are contagious? I mean, the fact that we had one at the beginning of the weekend and one at the end of the weekend, and that just several weeks ago we had the shooting in Virginia Beach. Does one mass shooter motivate somebody else to go out and commit another crime?
I don't think there's any doubt that that's true. And I mean, just to give you, I guess, the anecdotal evidence I can see here in this case, this particular shooter in El Paso, my understanding is that he referenced the shooting that happened in New Zealand, which was racially, ethnically, religiously motivated. And then that particular shooter had referenced the Dylan Roof shooter who shot the African-Americans in South Carolina. So they're all drawing on each other and sort of building upon a particular, you know, viewpoint or ideology. And I think it's definitely connected in those ways.
Now, I got to bring up the media, and you may have noticed, and I don't know if you were listening yesterday, I didn't mention the names of the individuals here. I think we got to talk about who did this, but I'm not trying to make martyrs or celebrities out of these individuals. But do you think this wall-to-wall media coverage, even for something that people are very interested in and have an emotional connection to, that that fans the flames? I mean, does law enforcement if they could really speak freely, do you think they'd say, hey, guys, this is perpetuating this. Ignore it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. So the idea that just by continuing this in an inflammatory way, does it sort of promote the problem more? I think where we have to do is focus less on politicizing these issues and focus less on just sort of the inflammatory aspects of it and talk more about solutions, right? I mean, are there things we can do, measures to put in place to prevent this in the future? I mean, that's really where the conversation should be. But unfortunately, as you mentioned, it sort of becomes talking points on both sides, and it really doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it does in large part come down not to looking to the FBI, but looking to those of us who interact with people on a daily basis. I remember one job I had where my boss said, oh, my God, I hope that wouldn't happen here. I was like, you don't think it would happen here? I mean, look at this whack job that I'm sitting across from every day. If they pulled out a gun and shot me in the head, I wouldn't be surprised by it. And he couldn't believe that I would say that. I was like, charming. I'm sure no one would ever get mad with what I would say. But come on. I mean, this person is demonstrating all this crazy.
I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. It's an amazing, and it's really a sad state of affairs that this is what society has come to. And I don't know what the answer is other than, you know, I think there's a couple of things we could do. People have talked about potentially, I know people don't like to think, you know, throw new laws at it every time you hear something bad happen. But there are ways you could make this domestic terrorism a federal crime. That's currently not a crime. There's no domestic terrorism federal crime. You have to charge this at the federal level with things like gun charges, hate crimes.
Right.
So you could treat this like international terrorism and sort of bring more tools to bear if you materially support a violent domestic terrorist group. That could be a crime, like we treat international terrorism.
But then we get into who defines that, right? So that becomes it. But then we get into who defines.
Absolutely, that's one reason we don't do that. We currently don't have an agency in the United States who designates or defines what a domestic terrorism organization is.
Well, important to have a conversation. I really appreciate it. Luke Hunt, former FBI special agent and now at Radford University. Thanks.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.